Hey regulars, Charlie here. We all spend a lot of time thinking about what we eat, but what about what we drink? Well, our friends at Kangen Water have an answer for you. When you call 800-494-8685 or visit Kangen Water, that's K-A-N-Water.com, you can learn more about the Kangen Water machine and to check out their specials on air purifiers. Kangen Water has been around for 50 years and has expanded into 9 countries, which shows that they really do have the staying power to outlast all their competition. The Kangen Water machine is the only real ionizer on the market. The rest, unfortunately, are nothing more than a mass-produced water filter. While Kangen Water is great for hydration, you can use it for all sorts of other health benefits, whether that be reducing acid reflux, migraine headaches, joint aches and pains, low energy, gout, and even muscle pain. Its antioxidants neutralize free radicals in your body and keep your immune system strong, while its alkaline properties balance the pH level of your body and keeps you healthy. If you drink a lot of energy drinks and have a very acidic diet, Kangen Water is a must. You can even use the water for weight loss. There are weight loss plans that rely on Kangen's alkaline water exclusively, but even without a plan, the water will help you lose weight. So if you're interested in improving your health and boosting your hydration, call 800-494-8685 or visit kanwater.com, that's K-A-N-water.com, to learn all about the Kangen Water machine and to check out their specials on air purifiers. Again, these deals will not last, so be sure to call and let them know that the Regular Joe Show team sent you.
Well, hello and welcome to one, welcome to all. Joe Gigante, your regular Joe with you on this, your Red, Right, and Wisconsin podcast. As always, we have a very special guest today. And you know why? Because they're on our show. I mean, if they're on our podcast, they're on our show. Right there, that makes them a cut above the rest. We're going to be talking to a Senate candidate from the great state of Wisconsin, seeking the Republican nomination on August 13th. You heard a little bit about her from her on the live show this day. We want to go in-depth, get to know her better. She's got a fascinating life story that I think you'll find very interesting. I'll let her share that. You can make your own mind up how you want to progress. I know that's, I don't want to steal any talking points, but I know that's one of the things she mentioned when we spoke. You know, there is no, we do not ordain people. We give the sovereigns of our country, which are the people, the chance to interview candidates and let their voice be heard in the form of the primary. And then obviously we have a general election after that, and we go forward from there. I am speaking, of course, of Rajani Ravijaran, who is a candidate out of Stevens Point, a former, I know a registered nurse at one point, certified midwife. She's got an amazing story, especially since she's a college student now. But that's kind of a little bit of reverse order. She did a bunch of things in life, then went back to college. She's the single mother of three children, divorced single mother of three children. And again, just a fascinating story. Rajani, I appreciate you spending time with us on the Red, Right, in Wisconsin podcast. I welcome you to this portion of the show and want to start with just this. Who are you? We talked a little bit about this on the live broadcast. You are a legal immigrant. You came to this country the right way. You are now a citizen of the United States, and you have some pretty strong feelings about citizenship and what you believe and why you're doing these things. If you can, kind of give people the start where life began with you and how you ended up here in the United States.
I immigrated from India, and I immigrated in 2011, legally immigrated here. And I became a United States citizen in 2015. So just to share that where I came from and who I am, I was born and raised in a very poor family in southern India. Poor means we did not have food to eat. So you know that I am a byproduct of a broken, economically broken nation. I struggled and suffered all the consequences you can get from a broken, financially broken nation. And that is one of the reasons I am running right now, because I can clearly see where this country is heading down to. So going back to who I am, I was raised without electricity and running water. We did not have food to eat, so my parents, around when I was 7 years old, they had to send me away to my aunt's family dairy farm, being raised there for a few years. So I was there early my childhood, taking care of the chores in the farm, gathering the feed for the cows, distributing the milk. So you know that my background, I am a peasant. I'm a peasant from the beginning, and still I am a peasant. Then back then, I had to fight for everything, for education, for acceptance, food, clothing, shelter, all of this. It was a fight for existence from the very beginning. There was no option to give up. You had to fight every single day to survive. I went to school every single day without breakfast because we did not have anything to eat. I went to school the whole week with the same pair of clothes. I walked miles and miles without shoes. As a child, I never celebrated my birthday. I did not even know when I was born. I never had a toy to play with. I never had a bed to sleep on. I slept on a concrete floor without a pillow and a bed sheet. That was my upbringing. From there, I went on and I became the first one to graduate from my family with a double major. I became a nurse and a midwife around the age of 21.
Now, if I may, I just want to jump in because I appreciate it's your story. And I appreciate you're like, yes, but I overcame and I made it. You know, I went and became a nurse and a midwife. But I just want to go back because, I mean, growing up, my mother and father were part of the Depression era in the United States. And you would hear the stories of how difficult it was, again, going without meals and, you know, having to patch clothes that they'd been wearing for some time. And it became probably like in the 70s and 80s in the United States, it became kind of a running joke, right? You know, oh, you know, I walked to school barefoot, uphill, both ways, in the snow, right? People would not really mock it, more just make fun of that era in the country because things had turned around and changed. Now, people make fun of that. They make jokes about it here in the United States. That was your lived experience. I mean, you literally were walking to school barefoot. And I've got to ask, I mean, obviously you're an adult woman now, you're a mother of three children, but what drove you then to, I mean, was it just pure survival instinct, or was there this idea in your mind that it could, you know, you could do better, and if you just kept pushing forward, you'd make it somehow, or what, you know, what kind of, I'm trying to think of a young kid going through what you're describing, why they wouldn't just throw their hands up and give up?
That's a good question. You know, it was a survival need to begin with. When you said about how hungry your parents were, I really know what is hunger means. That was the only thing I knew as a child, hunger pain all the time. There were days in my life I was not able to eat anything the whole day. I still remember fainting because of hunger as a seven-year-old girl because I did not have anything to eat the whole day. Around 10 years of age, my mother read a story, and that was an inspiration in my life. It was the story of Abraham Lincoln. I heard that story under the kerosene lamp. That was my first introduction to United States of America. My mother told me that President Lincoln was poor. President Lincoln did not have electricity either. He did his studies under the street lamp. So that was an inspiration then. That moment when I heard that story, I thought, if President Lincoln can, I can. I related my life with him. Later on, when I became a Christian, everything has changed. When Christ came into my life and made me a new creation, the perspective of my life was changed. I never even in my dream thought that I would immigrate to America. It was not in my plan, but it was in God's plan. Today I am sitting, I am living in the country where President Lincoln ruled as the President of the United States. Back then, I had no clue about that when I was listening that story from my mother. And that was an inspiration. And then Jesus Christ, that is my greatest role model in my life.
Now, I want to, because I've heard you talk about this, and for those, we're speaking with Rajani Ravijan, who's running for U.S. Senate. You can learn more about her run by going to Rajani for U.S. Senate. So you're going to have two S's back to back there. Rajani, FORUSSenate.com. And Rajani is Rejani. Rajani, FORUSSenate.com. To learn more about her and her positions, if you want to donate, you want to volunteer, that's the website to go to. Now, you talked about when we were together at the WAPACA dinner, Lincoln, Reagan, Trump dinner, you talked about the fact that you were homeless twice in your life. But not necessarily, I mean, people hear, oh, bad circumstances, not enough money, these kind of things. But in the case for you, it had to do with your conviction. And I know something that even in the short time you were on the live show, we got several emails and text messages from people saying, love the passion, love the fire that she was there. You know, one of the things people look for when they're discerning who they want to support, particularly now where we've had a number of high-profile elected officials basically defect. I don't know a better way to put it, but, you know, you think you're hiring one thing, and you turn out that you're not. You're getting something less than substandard. The conviction's not there. And you mentioned, obviously, your conversion to Christianity, but that conversion had some pretty hefty impact on your life, certainly for the good, right? I mean, it's your role model, but there was some negative that came with that as well.
Yes. See, I was born and raised in a Hindu family in southern India. So you can understand that in a culture-wise and religious-wise, it is a big deal for a girl, whoever, to leave the religion. That is taken as dishonoring the family and dishonoring God and dishonoring religion. So when I was in my 20s, I came to know that I am a sinner who needs the Savior. And I realized that 333 million God and goddesses in Hinduism cannot save me from my sins. The only Savior is found in Christianity, Jesus Christ. I came to know Christ, accepted Him as my God and personal Savior, and went and took a secret baptism, hid it from my family for a few months. Down the road, I felt like the Lord is leading me to confess my faith. I was too afraid. I knew what would happen if I do that, but I decided to obey God. I confessed my faith. After a few months of roller coaster events in my life, finally, I was given a choice, a final decision to make. Either I can pick Christ, otherwise I have to pick the family. And I still remember what I said to my family in that family meeting. The elders came from my mother's family and my father's family. They surrounded me and I was in the middle. That night, I still remember I said, if it is for the Christ's sake, I have to leave all of you. I will do it. But I am not willing to deny Christ for anyone's sake. That's not it. I had to pack up my bag. I had to leave home. That is the first time I became homeless for my faith in Christ. I was treated an outcast by my parents, my siblings, my entire family, and my clan. I was an outcast. I became nobody. I lost everything. I lost everyone. But I'm glad. I'm glad because I chose the right choice. My decision was right. The decision to follow Christ, picking up my cross and following Him in obedience. And I am so glad that I did that. The God who called me is faithful. Today I am testifying for Him in this podcast. I am in the greatest nation in the world, United States of America. He who called me is faithful.
Amen. Amen. Now, this doesn't affect your candidacy, what I'm about to ask, but I'm just curious, in the ensuing years, it's been a couple decades, has there been any opportunity to reconcile with your family? Have they come to accept who you are and to welcome you as family? I mean, obviously, they may not agree with the faith decision, or is that still a point of contention that keeps you estranged from them?
My family accepted me, and my marriage was a traditional arranged Christian wedding. But then I am the only Christian in my whole family. So you know how does this work, right?
I can imagine some fun conversations.
Yeah. You were born in that family, but you are not part of them. It is not, acceptance is in a different level. You can go, you can stay, you can talk to them, but it is just like, no, you are not one of them.
Sure. Now, you mentioned your marriage. You have it right in your bio that you're a divorced mother, single mother of three. If I recall, that was where the second chance or second situation where you were left homeless came in from that. I mean, and I share this because, again, going back to the idea of conviction, a lot of what you speak of isn't theory. I mean, whether it's questions of immigration, faith, testifying to the truth, standing up for what you believe, you've been through some of these crucibles in very real, tangible ways.
Yes. All I am speaking is my experience. My convictions came from my experience, so that you cannot leave that. Second time I became homeless in United States, when my 10-year-old domestic violence marriage was ended. I and my three children ended up in a family crisis center. I lived there for 3 months. During that time, I went to a restaurant and worked as a janitor, dishwasher, waitress, and a cashier. I scrubbed the toilet to feed my children. And from that family crisis center, I moved to a public housing. I lived a couple of years there, raised my children. During that time, I enrolled myself in UW Stevens Point. And right now I am majoring in political science and getting a certificate in international relations. And from there, I moved to my own home. I bought a home. Now I am a homeowner and raising my children. My children are 11-year-old, 10-year-old, and 6-year-old now. They go to a Christian school.
Now, I just got to ask, what do they think? Mom's running for Senate. I mean, that's got to be quite an education, for, you know, front and center, because you're still mom. You still do all the things mom's got to do. You're a student yourself. So there's, you know, there's an interesting kind of relationship there from the point of view of their students at a younger age. And they see mom going back to try to do better and try to increase your education level. And then in addition to that, with all the free time in the world, you're like, well, you know what? I'm going to run for Senate as well.
Actually, it is opposite. My children were asking me, when is this going to be over so we can go back to the normal life?
I can only imagine. So they're not into politics quite yet, then, is what you're saying.
Oh, they are. They are Trump supporters. They are conservative Republicans.
Well, that's so the way to get it started right at a young age.
Exactly. I'm raising three conservative Republicans at home. And I am so proud about that. And also, like you said, they had questions. They are children. They have questions because I used to spend 100% of my time with them. Now some of those times have been taken away from them. I am traveling. I've been to 40 counties already. I spoke to almost 65 events already. So there's a lot of time I am traveling. I am gone. So they want to know, why am I doing this? So the only answer I had for them, for you, so that you will have a country to grow up in. I came from a broken nation, and I do not want my children going through what I've been through. This country is worth to fight for. You know something? You mentioned about the Revolutionary War. You know how difficult it was. Our President George Washington had only 1,500 men ragtag army. When they marched through the in that winter through that snow, they left a blood trail behind them because they did not have proper shoes. They were hungry because there was nothing to eat. But they have a determined heart to fight against the evil, to preserve the God-given freedom, to keep the country for their children and grandchildren and for the future Americans like you and me. That determination is driving me. My love for this country originated from learning about the history of this nation. People say that I know about the history of United States more than an average American. Yes, I do. Why? Because I found out the handprints of Jesus Christ throughout the history of the United States of America. This land is a providence. This land is given to us by the God of heaven and earth. It is a providence. Our founding fathers came from all over the Europe. Puritans came here. You know, when they landed the United States, they did not know what kind of weather they are coming in. It was winter. So many of them died in that cold. Men died. Moms laid on the little children to keep them warm. And moms died first, and the children died next. This is the heritage we left with. If they were a compromising people, Puritans, our founding fathers, did not have to come to this country. They did not have to search for a land for freedom. They did not have to suffer anything they suffered. They could have stayed compromising to King George. They did not have to take their families and come in the Mayflower. Many of them died and got sick in the Mayflower itself. And after came here, they lost their families, their children, their husbands, their wives. But they did not give up. And that mentality is what we need right now, to fight. Compromising will take us nowhere. Compromising is what took us to this point, the fall of our nation. Right now, pick up the battle. Stand for the right cause. Be courageous. Fight the battle and take the country back. That's what I'm standing for. Everybody has to sacrifice something. Nothing great in life can be achieved without a fight, without a sacrifice. I am sacrificing my time with my children. I am fighting with everything I have. And I will not quit. I will not give up. Because that is not the heritage I used to in this country. I am picking up the battle where the founding fathers have left. At that time, it was them. Today, it is us. Let us take the baton and finish the race. That's what it is.
All right. So we're speaking with Rajani Ravijan, who is running for U.S. Senate. Again, go to Rajani, Rejani, for forusenate.com. Right in the About page, which is the main page, you have your platform positions listed. I want to go through a few of those because I think, again, you bring a unique perspective as someone that came to this country legally and then became a citizen. You mentioned on the broadcast that you not only became a U.S. citizen, but you gave up your citizenship in India, so you are proudly so, an American citizen. I don't know, are you currently a registered nurse as well, or formerly a registered nurse? I know that's part of your background. I just don't know the status.
I was formerly. I did not practice here because you know that I mentioned it was a domestic violence marriage. So I was a homeschooling mom, nothing but a homeschooling mom.
Well, look, I said this, and my mother was a stay-at-home mother. My wife was a stay-at-home mother for many, many years. And I've often said, and I did, funny enough, I just saw a meme on this on, I think, Facebook. And it was a woman that said, tell me again how it's not a job. And she listed all the things that the average stay-at-home mother does in a day. And I've always said the hardest job in the world is stay-at-home mother. It's a 24/7 job. It's pretty thankless, by and large, at least for the first 18 years, in most cases, when it comes to the kids. And it absolutely is a bedrock position because, you know, as the old adage says, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. Stay-at-home mothers are unsung heroes, and I think they don't get the just due that they have. So I would never say it as you were just that. I mean, you brought your knowledge, your life experience to that, and I'm sure that has had an incredible impact on your three children. Now, I brought up your past work as a registered nurse. Because some of the items you list is that you support medical freedom, no forced vaccinations. Tell us in kind of practical terms, I mean, obviously you're alluding to COVID, but there's other items there. You lived through that here in the United States as someone that had been in the medical profession, as a mother, and certainly as a conservative. If you were to become the senator in Wisconsin, in practical terms, what does that mean in terms of what you will do to support medical freedom?
You know, yesterday night when I was telling my six-year-old to go to bed early because she was tired, you know what she told me? I do not have to do whatever you are telling me. This is a free country.
You know, I tell my children when they say that, except for in this household, it's a benevolent dictatorship. They don't appreciate my humor, though.
Exactly. So that is the first thing. We are a free country. Under the United States Constitution, we can choose what we're supposed to eat, what we should wear, where we should live, what kind of housing we should have, and do we want to take the vaccination or not? These all things. First of all, this is a constitutional right issue. No one can force you. Let me tell you, when it comes to abortion, it's my body, my right. So think about the vaccination. It is our body, our right, right?
Well, so they say.
So that is the reason. Listen to me. As a nurse, when I speak, in my medical background, with my experience, we cannot develop a vaccination so quick and inject into people. It takes time. We need to test it long enough. We have to find out, is there any contraindications and side effects? And if there is side effects, whether the side effect is lesser than the benefit we can get, all these things have to be researched and find out before we inject into the people. With COVID-19 vaccination, it was so quick. To me, it is more political than the best interest of the people. So many of the medical big pharma companies made a lot of money with this mandatory vaccination law. So many of the members of Congress made a lot of money through insider trading with this mandatory vaccination law at our expense. I have friends developed the heart issues after the COVID-19 vaccination. I have my friend's parents, they developed the shingles after the COVID-19 vaccine. I had other friends who is going through mitochondrial damage. Mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell, which gives you energy. So mitochondrial damage, they are treating right now in a homeopathy since last 2 years. See, these are the things. So many people, those who took the vaccination, they got the COVID over and over and over again. Why? Because they compromised their immunity system with that vaccination. Look at the scientific data. You and I both know that this is a lab-generated virus. This COVID-19 is a lab-generated issue in China. Rather than taking care of that political issue, we took advantage on the situation for big pharma and the politicians to make more money. That is another reason when you ask me question in the live stream whether I would be supporting some other candidate who is the nominee. It all depends on what that person stands for. That is the reason I use the word uniparty. See, I have to tell you something here. It is a fact that Democrats, not only the Democrats' problem here, some Republicans are problem also. Some Republicans.
You won't get an argument from me. I'm often castigated for the fact that I will call out both Democrats and Republicans, because at the end of the day,
yes,
we should be serving truth in what is best, what is in service to the good, the true, and the beautiful, and in service to making our society a good and positive place. And letters after people's names don't necessarily give you that answer.
No, absolutely not. I would say that we have to look at the candidates and vote, not for the party, because it's not working out for us. Picking up the lesser evil voting for the party is not working for us. Our country is being run down by these people. Look at the latest $95 billion bill. What a disaster it is. We are in $37 trillion national debt right now. Couple months ago, it was 34 or 35. Where are we going? We don't have money for anything. And we are giving away more money to Taiwan, more money to Ukraine. How many billion? $172 billion we gave to Ukraine to fund that war. What's going on here? Why we have an open border? Why the illegal immigrants are they are not even immigrant. They are alien. There is nothing called undocumented citizens. There is only legal and illegal. There is no middle ground. Why are they coming to this country? There is no other country in the world has an open border. Nobody else can go and invade another country. Why we? That is the reason I talk about the uniparty. Why don't we have a border wall? In 2016, we had the House, we had the Senate, we had the presidency. Yet we do not have a border wall. Why?
Paul Ryan.
The question need to be answered.
Well, I would sum it up in two words, Paul Ryan, but there's others as well.
Yes.
And I agree with you completely. Now, before, I just want to pause for a moment, because I want to go back on the question of the jab. And as you said, more needs to be done. You pointed out rightly that, 9 new billionaires were minted during COVID just in the pharmaceutical industry. 9 different people became billionaires directly related to the what is one of the most massive shifts of wealth in modern history, which is what the COVID scandemic really was. It was a convenient cover to move money around. 9 new billionaires. And one of the amazing things, you spoke about some of your friends that are having side effects and trying to heal themselves from what went on, is of course all of these big pharma companies have immunity from any prosecution, any lawsuits that was given to them by the government. My question to you is, if you were elected senator, would you lead the way to repealing this immunity so that injured individuals could actually seek to redress this directly with the pharmaceutical industry, who, as you pointed out, has benefited to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars?
Yes, absolutely.
And now, when you said, and you also talked about, I was going to do a follow up, but I want to ask another quick question on the medical front. You obviously, in addition to being a registered nurse, you also were a midwife. Now, you state that you stand for life, that you are pro-life. That, meaning no disrespect, it's a little bit of a vague statement, though, to say I stand for life, because nowadays people have pretty radically different definitions of when life begins, what life is. What does that mean, both, for you personally, certainly as a senator, but with your own individual experience as a midwife as well?
Before I explain the answer to that question, I just have to let you know that I am endorsed by Pro-Life Wisconsin.
That is, which you don't get that endorsement easily. That you have to, for those that aren't familiar, there's two pro-life organizations. I mean, there's other groups like Wisconsin Family Action that also are pro-life, but two specific pro-life groups in Wisconsin. You have Wisconsin Right to Life, and then you have Pro-Life Wisconsin. Pro-Life Wisconsin is the gold standard. Wisconsin Right to Life, much like National Right to Life, has a lower bar. They tend to allow exceptions and any number of things. They don't support personhood, where Wisconsin, with Pro-Life Wisconsin, is a 100% pro-life organization, and to get that, you have to earn that endorsement, and that's not just for you, that's for anyone that has their endorsement.
Yes, absolutely. So, again, just you are right. People will say that they are pro-life. Then they come with a 14-week abortion ban, exemption in this area, exemption in that area. Absolutely, they are not pro-life. They are pro-choice. There is no middle ground in that issue. Either you are pro-life, otherwise you are pro-choice. You cannot be a pro-life and have exemption. Also, I need to understand that this pro-life thing is, issue is not only about the pregnant women. It's not only about the babies. It is about the elderly as well. It
Absolutely.
Is about against the, it is against euthanasia. It is against the physician-assisted suicide. It is against all of that. It is not only talking about the children. Yes, when it comes to children, it is more relevant. We talk more about this pro-life. My opponent, my primary opponent, also claims as a pro-life. Remember that. But then, in a recent interview, I was talking about women should have choice, right to choose early on their pregnancy. Then comes exemption. So I do not know how can you be a pro-life and you have all this category giving right to abortion. Like you mentioned, I was a midwife. I saw these babies coming out of the womb. I held them in my hand. I cleaned them. I know they are not unwanted tissue. They are human babies. Abortion is a humanitarian crisis. We talk about the humanitarian crisis in the other part of the world. Abortion is the humanitarian crisis we largely facing in our country. It is violence in the womb. Do you want to know what is exactly happening in the womb?
Oh, I'm familiar.
It is just like if somebody comes and take you to a butcher shop, chop your legs first, hands first, then hit you on your head, then cut you off and take you out of the butcher shop and throw you in the trash. That is exactly happens in the case of abortion. See, I am not for abortion. I have no exemption. No exemption whatsoever. There is a reason. Because these babies are granted right to life. Life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness under the United States Constitution. Do you think that our founding fathers, godly men and women, they would make a provision for abortion in our Constitution? No, they will not. Do you even know how the United States Constitution was written? The First Continental Congress, when they came together, there was only 3 million people in the United States of America. Our founding fathers came together for First Continental Congress, and they prayed and fasted for 3 days. John Adams sent a letter to his wife, Abigail, saying that, read a particular psalm and pray those 3 days and fast, also requesting her to ask her father, who was a pastor, to do the same. That is the way our Constitution was written in Judeo-Christian principles. This land was founded. So I do not believe founding fathers would have made a provision for abortion. Right now, Republican Party is advocating for 14 weeks abortion ban, which I stand against it, I speak against it, because it is wrong. It is shedding the innocent blood in order to get the liberal vote. Remember, Republicans are not going to get any liberal vote. Democrats are willing to go up to birth, abortion up to birth. And these 14 weeks you are throwing is just like peanuts. It's not going to get you any vote. But would rather, what it is going to happen here? Republican conservatives and pro-lifers will leave the Republican Party and will become independent. That is what's going to happen. So we have to stand on our principles. We cannot kill the innocent babies to get some votes. That's what all going on here. So So coming back to as a midwife, remember, I have compassion for these people. The people, those who are advocating for abortion, is not a friend of a woman or the children. I met with several women, those who had abortion when they were in their 20s. Now they are in their late 50s, still walking with a black cloud around their head about that baby they killed. One of them mentioned to me that it was a girl. After all these long years, still when I see another child or another grown-up, will say that could be my child, that could be my grandchild. Still beating their head up. They are devastated. The women go through abortion. They are not themselves anymore because they think about, they at some point in their life, they will come to realize that they murdered their own babies. What abortion industry and corrupted politicians are doing there, they are trying to take advantage on a woman during her vulnerable moment. When a college student gets pregnant, she is very afraid. What would the people think? What would the parents think? What will happen to my future? How am I going to raise this child all of a sudden? And the guy is nowhere to be found. Nobody is taking responsibility. What she can do? She is afraid. Pregnancy hormones are kicking in. She is not making the correct judgment at that time. And here comes abortionists and abortion industry. Take advantage on that situation, ripping her child from her womb and selling the body part of that child and making the money and leaving the woman in the devastation and the guilt for lifetime. That is what the abortion industry does. I stand for women. I stand for children. I advocate for women. I am a women's advocate. So here is what we are going to do, a good situation. We will put more money towards how to protect these women, how to protect these vulnerable children, and how can we make sure that they are taken care of so that they can bring that child out, give birth to the child, put more money towards the adoption, and make the adoption easy. Also, make sure that these women are financially supported, emotionally taken care of, and they have a support system around them so that they can take their time and make the right decision. I am not against any woman who gets pregnant without a marriage. I am not against, or I do not hate anybody who had an abortion. All I have is a compassionate mind towards them. I have compassion for them, for what they've been through. And I want to help them, but not the way by ripping their child out of their womb and leaving them in misery for life. That's it.
Amen. Now, I want to quickly run through a couple more of these topics. I think there's one I'm looking at that, if I understand it correctly, I find this interesting position because I think it again separates you from others, not just in Wisconsin, but others running right now, by and large, in the House and the Senate, which is, you talk about protecting the freedom of speech, First Amendment. But specifically, if I'm reading this correctly, it says you oppose the Restrict Act, which is the so-called TikTok ban, which basically they either have to divest, the company that owns TikTok has to divest its ownership from Communist China, or they have to sell their algorithm to another company if they don't divest, or it will be banned in the United States of America. It says you oppose that. I'd like to get your thought on why you oppose it. But then also you said you would introduce a data protection bill that's meant to protect information. Is that kind of your solution to the TikTok problem, or is that kind of a separate part of First Amendment rights that you want to protect?
It is my solution for the TikTok problem because politicians are saying that our data has been gone to China and it is a Chinese company. But we all know that it is more political than anything else. If you want to protect the data, protect our data from Facebook. Why don't you do that? Why are you not talking about how Facebook has funded for these drop boxes in 2020? Why are you not talking about that? TikTok did not do that. These politicians who introduced that bill and worked behind that bill aggressively, they were getting money from AFAC, a private entity funding these politicians. Those had connection with Facebook. So when I tried to figure out what is happening here, I came to know the striking factor that TikTok's CEO used to work for Facebook. And then he left Facebook and went to make his own platform. Now his platform is more people liking and famous than the Facebook. So all of a sudden, what I am understanding is Facebook is lobbying these politicians to take the TikTok down. You know that we do not have freedom of speech in Facebook. For example, you put something for President Trump and against President Joe Biden, your account will be flagged and it will be banned for a time from Facebook. But that thing does not happen in TikTok. That is completely a free speech platform. Also, another question I have is, why are we doing this in an election year? Why? You cannot come together and make a unanimous decision to close our border. That is what we need right now. And you cannot come to an agreement for that. But you guys all can come together to work for the Facebook and then ban this TikTok platform, which is the free speech platform, against our constitution, and then put that out of the way so you can manipulate another election. See, I am talking like a regular person, okay? I don't care about the viewers will vote for me or not. I am speaking the truth.
No, but I want to ask you, if I may, I want to ask you, you've said a couple times that TikTok is a free speech platform. What about the concerns of the ownership of the algorithm and the ability for the communist Chinese to access the data? I'm playing devil's advocate when I ask this. Does that not concern you that I don't disagree, by the way, on Facebook, but in terms of TikTok itself, do you really think it's completely free speech, or is it just kept open by the communist Chinese so they have more access to users?
So where is the evidence that the Chinese government are accessing it? That is the first thing. Show me the evidence. That is only a talk on the table. You are not giving us any evidence of that. Why are you doing this backdoor deal? I stand with Senator Rand Paul. Like he said, let us bring a data protection bill rather than banning the whole free speech platform. So my question is that what is next? Twitter? Telegram? Truth Social? What is next? If you can control people from communicating each other to manipulate your way to whatever you are planning for, what is next? You are talking about the China is accessing this. China is accessing everything almost we have now. You know that? The White House is ruled by Chinese government right now. We have to come for a solution for that problem right now. Our country is wide open. Chinese government, Chinese Communist Party is taking advantage on the current administration. We have to make a decision about that. George Soros' son visited White House multiple times under the Biden administration. What was the motive behind that? Why these politicians had money from AIPAC and they won't do anything for the border? They are all behind the TikTok. Why? It is just like President Trump. Then when the man was indicted over and over and over again, I knew he is a good candidate. Otherwise, they wouldn't be going after him. The same way, if these people are going after TikTok, I know that platform is better than the Facebook or any other platform. Otherwise, they wouldn't have done that. We all know. We all have brains. We all can use. We all can think. I am using mine.
Fair enough. That's why I wanted to ask the question. Now, you also say that you, of course, defend, support the Second Amendment right to bear arms. If you can, just again, a little more detail on that. Is there any kind of red flag laws or restrictions or anything like that that you would support if elected? And if no to that question, are there things you would look at perhaps repealing? We have several people that wrote in wanting to, you know, asking the question, would you, for example, would you be willing to support a bill that would allow suppressors to be used, short-barreled rifles to be used, short-barreled shotguns, you know, to take them off of the NFA list? Where exactly are you when it comes to the Second Amendment?
I will vote against any bill coming on my table against the Second Amendment right. No restriction, no banning, nothing. Because that is given to us under the United States Constitution. The right to bear arms shall not be infringed. So when you come to say that, okay, what about the school shooting? What about the illegals? The answer is illegal doesn't care about your law and restrictions, okay? If you put a law and a restriction there, only the normal people, law-abiding citizens, they will struggle to fight against the illegals and criminals. Criminals do not need your law and restriction. They will have the weapons what they want. So that is the reason I stand for the Second Amendment right. No restriction, no banning. Any bill comes on my table, I will vote against.
So now, when we look at, again, going through kind of the issues and the things that matter, you came to this country legally. You are an American citizen. You mentioned that you want to fix the immigration system from an immigrant's perspective and eliminate illegal immigration. Now, when Democrats say they want to eliminate illegal immigration, it means amnesty. What does that mean for you as somebody that went through the process, did it the right way, did it the hard way? In practical terms, what does that mean in terms of a senator of the United States? What kind of bills would you be looking to support or introduce?
Deportation. That is what I mean. They do not belong here. They need to go back to from where they came from. When I elected as the next United States Senator, I will introduce a bill to get the federal funding for border wall. And while we are building the border wall, we have to dispatch our National Guard to our southern and northern border to make sure that none of the illegals will get in. There is nothing wrong for us to use our National Guard for our national security, because when we have an open border, we do not have a national security. We are not a sovereign nation. We have to reclaim our national sovereignty, and we have to reclaim our national security. Also, I will enable ICE to go to every corner of our country and bring the illegals out and send them back to where they came from. There is one and only path to come to this country. That is the legal path, and that is the only path. These people, they have seen an opportunity. They have seen an open border, and they infringed our law and regulations, our judicial system, our constitution to be here, and that is wrong. Deportation, that's what I take the step.
Now, we're speaking with Rajani Ravijan, who is running for U.S. Senate here in the state of Wisconsin. Again, her website, rajaniforussenate.com, RajaniforUSSenate.com. You can learn more. You can donate. You can get on their mailing list. So check out the website to learn more. As we wrap up here, Rajani, believe it or not, we've been talking almost an hour. It's been flying by. But there, again, so much fascinating information to learn about you, your positions on all these key issues, which is why we wanted to be able to give people that opportunity. I always like to ask this, people that are running for office, you know, a lot of people go out and knock on doors. As we wrap up, if, you know, you're knocking on someone's door, they open the door and you say, I'm running for U.S. Senate. And they say, well, why in the world should I vote for you? What would be your elevator speech, or your door speech, and that like 30-second to 1 minute summary of why they should choose you over any other candidate, Republican or Democrat, in the coming elections?
I am not a businesswoman. I am not a millionaire. I am not a billionaire. I'm a regular mom. I care about my children. I am fighting for my children, your children, and your grandchildren. If you want to have a safe border, vote for me. If you want to have a safe country, vote for me. If you want to keep your social security age to 65 years, vote for me. If you want to have lower gas prices and to make this country energy independent, vote for me. If you want to have affordable gas price, grocery price, and housing, vote for me. Farmers, if you want an ally in the Senate to support you, protect you farmers and your farmland, vote for me. If you want to keep your Second Amendment, your constitutional rights, vote for me. If you are looking for somebody who knows your struggle, what you are going through in day-to-day life, struggling to pay the mortgage, struggling to put the food on the table, if you want somebody among you to represent you and your best interests in D.C., vote for me. If you want a fighter who will stand and fight for convictions, vote for me. If you want somebody who is courage enough to stand up against any corrupted politicians and corrupted system, vote for me. I am your person. I will take your best interest to D.C. I will represent for your best interest and your children's best interest. And I will work towards the goal to make this America great again. Thank you.
Well, Rajani, I appreciate your time. It's been fascinating. As I said, I think you have an amazing story. I appreciate you sharing it with us. I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon. I'm sure we'll come, you know, cross paths out on the road in these next days, weeks, and months. I'll be out, I'll be at the Langlade County dinner this coming weekend. I appreciate you taking the time. Is there any final words you want to offer before we wrap up today's Red, Right in Wisconsin podcast?
Yes, absolutely. Like I said, I'm a mom. I need your support. I need millions of votes, not millions of dollars. You can go to my website, which is rajaniforussenate.com. We need donations. I am a We the People candidate. I am not the party's choice. I am not the anointed candidate of Republican Party of Wisconsin. I am not anointed. I'm a regular mom and a regular person. I need your help. You can go to my website, which is rajaniforussenate.com, and please donate. We need money. We need your help to get this race going. So please go and donate. Also, we are looking for volunteers. We need 2,000 signatures to be on the ballot. So we are looking for volunteers to get the signatures and volunteer in the campaign. Also donate. Thank you.
Rajani, I appreciate it. Again, as she said, it's rajaniforussenate.com, rajaniforussenate.com. I appreciate you being a part of the Red, Right in Wisconsin podcast today. She's given you a lot to think about. We went through a litany. I mean, we could probably do a whole nother hour on any number of these topics, and there's always more issues. But I think we covered a vast majority of them, especially the ones that, you know, she talked about the border, securing the border, getting rid of illegal immigrants, deporting them, straight up. She talked about the boondoggle of the $95 billion expenditure funding other people's borders, Second Amendment, First Amendment, the right to life. You can learn more on her website. But as I tell you, we've got to be informed so we can get involved. And you got the chance to learn a lot today. I appreciate Rajani Ravijan joining me today. We'll be back at it tomorrow. Remember, live life boldly.